Catherine, and I am an alcoholic. And no, I'm not your main speaker, but I do have the privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. You know, one of the things about being an Alcoholics Anonymous and getting the opportunity to share your experience, strength, and hope with another alcoholic like I've gotten to do with Britta for the last couple of years has been tremendous. And I have definitely gotten more from her than she's gotten from me. She has helped me grow spiritually, and she's got a great message, and I just am so happy that you guys are here and you're going to get to hear it. And the other special news about tonight is that this is Britta's birthday month. On July 22nd, she turned 2 years, so I also want to present her with her two-year chip.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Britta. I'm an alcoholic. Yes, I celebrated 2 years on July 22nd. I'm super excited. I'm sorry. I also had my belly button birthday, so on July 7th, I turned 31. And so it's been a fun July month. Okay. To share my experience, strength, and hope, I'm just honored to have all my friends and people here at AA. I couldn't have done it without this program. Let's see. How it started, I grew up in Three Rivers, and I have... Thank you. I love Three Rivers. Grew up, you know, country girl, going outside, going hunting and fishing, and I have an older sister and a younger brother, and, you know, my parents drank a little, and it was kind of just there. And when I got older, you know, in middle school, you know, I noticed my mom drinking a lot, but it didn't faze me. I was super shy, tomboy, didn't want to talk, was scared. I had an R problem, so I had to go to speech therapy because I would say my name, Guadalupe. And so people would laugh at me. And my mom made me answer the phone, Reader's Residence, this is Britta, how may I help you? And I had, you know, it's hard. And so I didn't like to talk because I thought I sounded funny. And so I did speech therapy, and I remember sitting in my room, go all the time just to get those R's right. And I think I'm doing good at it now. But, so yeah, I got into sports. That was my out. You know, I was hard at sports. I loved volleyball. I wanted to be a professional volleyball player. That was my goal. And I ended up going to Central Valley Christian High School. My sister was there, and so my parents said, okay, you're going to go where your sister's at. And all my friends went to Woodlake. And so it's kind of that your close family, you know, all of them were smoking cigarettes and, you know, kind of drinky, but not really. And I was kind of on the outside, so I went to CEC. They went to Woodlake. And so it was me starting all over again with new friends, and I had a hard time. I was the shortest girl at 5'11 and a half. All the girls were 6'1, 6'2. So it was a challenge with sports, and I ended up getting on the volleyball team, and I was super stoked. And before my first game, I got in a horse accident, and I cracked my skull, fractured my jaw, broke two of my teeth, and I had blackouts. This is a little numb still, and I couldn't play sports for 3 years. That broke my heart. And my out was eating. I gained up to 250 pounds in high school and just wore baggy sweaters, baggy pants. In the yearbook, I was the most invisible girl in school. And my out from that was working. I started working at a very young age, you know, 14 years old, cleaning hotel rooms, 16, kitchen prep, 16 years old, I was at Glick's Meat Market. So it was going to school and putting on that face to pass and then going to work and doing a whole other issues to deal with, to get money to do stuff. When I turned 16, we all got our license. I started hanging out with my friends from Three Rivers. And so that was a different change for me. You know, they would sit at Borders and smoke cigarettes, and that was it. And so it was just, I was that chameleon that I would be the good student and then go and try to be the bad girl and then go and date the bad boys. And I didn't know, I didn't like me then either. I didn't really like to talk. I didn't want to express myself in school. I wanted to be invisible. I didn't have that connection with a higher power. I went to church a lot growing up. But I just thought going to church and smiling and singing, and that was it. You know, I was a sailor. I cussed like a sailor. I had a bad attitude. I talked back a lot to my parents. For me introducing alcohol, I threw myself a surprise party. Yeah, I threw myself a surprise party for my 18th birthday. I graduated high school in 2003, and so I was like, okay, all my friends, and by selling a place, they can get alcohol, and I told my mom, oh, they're throwing me a surprise party, don't say anything, and so she let me spend the night, and that was the first introduction to alcohol. Vodka was my thing for a while, so I was introduced to vodka. I poured over Pringles and soggy Pringles, and I, you know, introduced pot and other substances, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in love. You know, this took me out of that insecure, you know, invisible girl, this Wonder Woman. I was this, you know, outgoing, could say whatever I want to say, and people listened to me, and it was a change, and I loved it. And so I got, first I didn't think I was smart enough to get accepted to college. I applied to Stanislaus, Cal State Stanislaus in Turlock, and my sister was going there, and I got accepted. So I went to school in 2003, and, you know, by then it was just finding the people that liked to drink. You know, my neighbor, she liked to drink, and so we drank a lot. And the first semester, I got kicked out of two classes because it was weightlifting at 7 a.m., and I did not wake up. Yeah, don't do that. And so I learned about, you know, you got kicked out because you missed 7 days of class, you know, and I was an instant blackout drinker. I wanted to be the girl that would drink you under the table. I'm German and Swedish, so, yeah, you know, I can do this. And I would, you know, people would put bets on. I would be doing the cake stand. I would be, you know. So it was always throwing those burn chicken parties and just having lots of fun. And I noticed the first, like, luau at college, I was sitting in the corner watching everyone have fun. And I said, I'm not going to be the shy girl and insecure. I'm going to be the person. I want to be the, like, people following me this time. And that changed into a big party scene. So I was at school for 5 years. I got introduced to a lot of other substances I ended up doing a lot more of than alcohol. And I ended up graduating college, thankfully, in 2008. With my bachelor's degree in communications. And once I got that diploma and, you know, got high and drunk, I was like, what am I going to do now? I don't know what to do. And my mom said, well, you need a job. And during that time, I had no clue what I was doing. My mom, you know, my parents said, don't work. We're paying you to go to school. You go to school, you know, get the education, and then you start work. And so I was so into my party scene and drug life, I didn't want to work. I didn't care about looking for a job. I didn't spend that quality time. I mean, it was to the point that I got so drunk, I walked up my stairs to my apartment and fell asleep. I woke up the next morning and I had blood all over the wall, blood all over my pillow. I was late to work. I didn't look at my head. I just threw my hair up and went to work. And my coworker, my boss, noticed I had blood dripping down my neck. And I ended up falling down the stairs and hitting my head on the sidewalk. And I didn't even remember that. And I went to the doctor like 24 hours later, and they said you should have had staples. This is a bad gash. And it's just those continuous things, you know, not even knowing, blacking out, locking your keys in your car, and just it was a mess. And I kept on doing it. I graduated in 2008. In 2007, my aunt, my mom's sister, died of alcoholism. You know, she drank herself to death, and they found her in her bathroom for 5 days. And my dad just said, you know, I remember them calling me, and I was, of course, drunk, and I didn't care. You know, I said, too bad for her. And I didn't care about anyone. I burned a lot of bridges. I met a guy, my ex-husband, at a bar, and my bar name was Tiffany because Bridget was too hard to say. And you go up to a guy and say, hi, I'm Britta, huh? And so it was Tiffany. It was easier to say, and I like the F. So I ended up meeting him, And then it was just, we were glued at the hip, you know, and we were Bonnie and Clyde. He was short, which, you know, I don't date short guys, but I did. And he was really nice, and but so into the drugs, we got into it really bad. And so after I graduated college, my job, I became a renter for my dealer at the time. You know, I told my mom, I'm going to work. She didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, it was me getting in my nice interview clothes with my lime green Beetle and sitting at a truck stop panhandling. You know, it took me like 45 minutes to fake cry. Like, I had to think of something really sad to cry. And then I cried, got the tears going, and then I just started going at people, and it was just, it was like automatic. You know, I was a panhandler, you know, with a bachelor's degree, just to get what I wanted. You know, it was everyone, I mean, I would sit there with my dad's credit card for Chevron and say, it won't work, oh my gosh. And then they'd fill up my tank, give me cash, and then I'd do my thing. And it was continuous. And I ended up moving back here in 2009, and my mom and I had a fight about my boyfriend at the time, and I took off, and I ended up not wanting to come home because my mom wanted me to break up with him. I'm 23 years old, and your mom's saying you can't see the guy you love, and I was thinking we're Romeo and Juliet, no one can take us apart, and so I ended up sleeping for 3 months homeless in my lime green Beetle with two other people. And that was not fun, but it was fun at that time for me. I was on the run. I was chasing that dragon. I was having the time of my life, but it was miserable because it was, where's the next high? Where's the next drunk? What am I going to do? The things I did then, stealing, lying, manipulating people, I knew that's not me, but I was so wrapped up in this disease, I didn't know what to do. You know, I'd rather not go through withdrawals. I'd rather keep it going. And it was, you know, it was awful. And my parents ended up coming to Sherlock, and they found me, and they let my tires out so I couldn't go anywhere. And so they said, okay, you're going to go to, my dad ended up leaving for a trip, and my mom had me, and she's like, I need to Google what you're doing. I need to know, understand this disease. And weren't we good enough parents? That's what she said. And I said, you guys were wonderful parents, you know, but it was me trying to, how do I get my way out of this? It was always, how do I get my way out of this, what I just did? And it was always finding that story, what to tell someone. And they sent me to the St. Mary's Hospital in Bakersfield to detox. And I remember walking in there just shaking. And I had, you know, some Suboxone, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, I'm going to be here for 5 days. And yeah, that didn't work out. You know, I met someone in there and left with him. I didn't even know who he was. What? You can do what? Let's go. And it was just that I'm going to get it when I want it. And, you know, I could have been killed. I could have been something worse, you know. And I remember staying with this stranger for a couple days and calling my mom. I don't know what happened. They let me out. You know, it's their fault. It's not my fault. And my mom, you know, they came and got me and said, you need to go to a rehab. And so they took me to the Beacon House in Monterey. And so I went to Monterey, and they packed my bags, and they said, you're forbidden to talk to your boyfriend. He's no longer in your life. And my mind is already manipulating. I can't wait to call him and have him come and see me. And so I played the schoolgirl again. I learned the steps. I read the books. I went to classes. You know, my counselor wanted me to look in the mirror and say, I am beautiful. I couldn't do that. I couldn't even look myself in the face, like in the eye, and say that. I did not feel like I was beautiful. I hated myself. I wanted to get out and numb everything I felt. I hated just everything. And I did the 30 days, and my parents said, I want you to stay in Monterey. You know, drugs and alcohol are not here. They're, you know, you need to stay there. So I stayed there. They paid for me to do the transitional living. I stayed at the apartment, and I worked at a bakery and had free donuts, and then I worked at a movie theater, so I had a 16-hour day shift. And, you know, the minute I moved off the site on the rehab, I remember walking home at 11 o'clock and getting home and opening, I was drinking, you know, a 32. At Budweiser. I just remember. And then next it was Natural Life. I was just sitting there drinking, and I had almost a year. And I just was like, oh my goodness, it was natural. It was just going to the alcohol store and going and drinking. And so I played the fake AA game. was that person that would go to AA meetings and say, I'm an addict, I'm not an alcoholic. I had an addiction for drugs, not alcohol. I'm fine with alcohol. Like, I had to rationalize it to me. But at the end, it caught up to me, you know. I ended up losing my job at the bakery because I hurt people there, you know, showing up late, not being coherent. And at that time, my boyfriend was living with me. I had him hiding for 2 years, and my parents didn't know. And, you know, it was toxic. And I found out that I was pregnant, 5 months pregnant, I didn't know. And it was that calling my mom and telling her and her saying, oh, well, we're not going to help you. And I just remember feeling that, what do? I can't be a mom. I told myself, I am not smart enough to be a mom. You know, I don't want to do this. And I remember we had to leave, and we went to Pioneer, where my ex's parents lived. And it was just a toxic environment, you know. They all smoked, they all drank, and it was just fighting and miserable, you know. It was miserable. And I ended up having a beautiful boy and healthy, and we were stuck there. You know, it was this little teeny town called West Point, and it was 45 minutes to any natural, like, grocery store or fast food. And so my ex didn't get that much work. So my parents here said, we have a condo for you. We have a car for you. We have a job for your husband. Come. Here it is. We're so proud of you guys. And we came in, moved in Visalia, and not even 2 months after we moved in, we started doing the same thing all over again, but 10 times worse. You know, we'd get some sobriety here and there, a couple months worth, but it was just full on after we can do this a little, we could just do a little bit. And, but for me, instead of panhandling, I thought I was too good enough for that. I'd rather steal from people and manipulate people and giving me stuff. And my grandma, she was on bed rest. She was dying. And I would sneak into her house, steal checks, steal cash. And she was so delusional, so not coherent. She didn't know. And, you know, I made my financial and emotional amends to her. She passed away, and I was in my addiction. You know, I wasn't there to be that supportive granddaughter. And my neighbor, he trusted me. We asked him every day for $20, and he would give it to us, and we'd pay him back the next day, and then he'd give it to us again. And he ended up trusting us with the key to his condo. And I ended up, you know, we'd watch till he left, and we'd walk in, and, you know, no ski mask, but we'd just walk in, and we'd steal stuff, saying, oh, well, he won't miss this. He won't miss this. And all of a sudden, on Valentine's Day, 2013, I had two police officers at my door. And I thought my ex was going to get arrested for substance. And we both got arrested for 2 felonies in fraud and a felony in home burglary. So I was facing 3 felonies. And I was like, I was him. And I was, you know, I'm a girl. I don't do that. And I always thought I could get away with things. You know, I played that, huh? You know, that, huh? That dumb blonde thing, you know. And I always thought I could get away with it. And that guy was like, nope, you're going. And here I'm holding my not even 1-year-old and not coherent. And I'm just like, it was him. It wasn't me. And trying to make up 15 different stories in 5 minutes to get myself off, but knowing these police officers are not leaving without me. And so I didn't want my son in CPS. I called my sister. She is a social worker at the hospital, and she came, and they waited for her and came and got Blake, and they handcuffed me. I remember crying because I never thought this possible could happen. They handcuffed me, and I remember driving to Bob Wiley's, and the guy in the front, police officer, you need to get a divorce. He's bringing you down. And I just thought, but he loves me. You know, and I had a hard time finding those connections with people, you know. And when I got processed, I cried the whole time. You know, I couldn't believe I was in jail. I was so scared of all those movies. And then I was trying to be tough, and I can't be that tough. And then it was like standing really tall because I'm like a giant, so people won't get around me. But so I went through withdrawals, you know, and I was miserable. And I was there for 7 days. My ex got out in one day. His parents came and bailed him out in one day. I called my parents. They said, no. If this is the life you want, you get it. And they came and visited me when I was in jail. And I looked awful. I had one 10-second shower with a tiny little razor and no shampoo. And my hair was gross. And it was just, it was awful. I cried a lot. And the light, I couldn't sleep with the pillow. There's no pillow. I mean, I was starving all the time. And it wasn't fun. I would never want to go back. I am not, yeah, anyway, I got out of jail. When I got out of jail, they said, they changed my 3 felonies, which I do a lot of jail time for. They gave me 1 misdemeanor in commercial burglary, and I did, instead of 86 days in jail, I did half time. So I did 36 days on house arrest. So I made as many doctor's appointments and dentist appointments as I could so I can get out of the house. And I followed protocol, and I showed up, I did my drug test, and, you know, I was like, I can do this. I'm so good at this. And I was screaming. You know, the minute they cut my anklet off, I wanted to go and drink. I was like, this is, I don't know what to do now. What am I going to do? And I ended up getting a divorce, and so that was hard, too. But we got a divorce, and, you know, meanwhile, the judge is saying, you and your husband have too much relapse. You know, when we did mediation, he said, how are you guys fit parents? Look at all this relapse. Look at all of, you know, his jail time. Look what you've just done. And so they said, you have to find a polysubstance abuse counselor. You need to have 3 sessions and get a nice letter saying that you're a fit parent. And I remember calling around and calling around, and I found one. And I went in, and I talked to him about what's going on, and then, you know, I had my 3 sessions, and then finally, he said, are you ready to stop, you know, are you ready to be real, stop the BS and tell me what you feel? And I remember just sitting there crying for 3 hours, and I never opened up to him. He was the first person I told everything to, and I felt like, you know, what's going to happen? You know, I was so scared of seeing what would happen if I told someone how I really felt. And, you know, he did the letter, but I ended up calling him. He told me, call me every day. And I've called him every day for like 2 years. It was funny. So, but, you know, I did the letter, we did the course, and we had to go to AA just to show that we're doing something. And that first year I'd go, probably in the first couple months when I was seeing my counselor, I would go to a meeting, go home and drink. Go to a meeting, go home and drink. And I didn't want to work the steps. I wanted someone else to do them for me. And my counselor introduced me to a gal, my sponsor, and she, you know, she was really good. She was, you know, this is the answer to these questions. I want you to read this. And I'm like, she's making me do work, you know. And I did it. I went home. I read this, you know, the what is a sponsor? What do you want in a sponsor? And I, you know, I told her I really want to change me. You know, I'm sick of this. And so I started working the steps with her. But when it got to step 4, I shut the book. I didn't want to talk about my sex inventory. I didn't know half the people. I don't remember their names. I didn't want to talk about anything. And that really hurt. And I said, no. And she, you know, probably almost that first year, she said, you know, I can't work with you if you're not willing to do it. And I remember I woke up with my son, and I wanted to get high. I wanted to drink. I wanted to get out of me. I was aching. And so I'm sitting there, and I end up, you know, relapsing. And I called her, and I said, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I want a change. And since then, I have worked the steps thoroughly. I have, you know, sharing with others. And it's just, you know, it's been an amazing turn since I gave my will and my life over the higher power of my understanding. He has just cleared the pathway, opened the door, and has put everything in front of me what I needed next. The next indicated thing. My sponsor told me to read pages 86 and 87 in the big book. And I did for a very long time. And I have them memorized now. And, you know, I wake up and I say that. You know, I wake up and I'm blessed to have a shower with a bigger towel than that at jail. Like, what do you do with that? I was like, where's my towel? They're like, really? And they, you know, and it just, it was like, I get up and I crave getting a shower, doing laundry. I was wearing the same clothes in there for 7 days. And the things I took for granted for, you know, the things I really took for granted, food and, you know, a roof over my head, you know. I look back and say, wow, you know, I'd rather spend the night for how many days, how many months in a lime green beetle at a truck stop to do that, you know, for that drug. That's where it took me. I didn't care about my family. I didn't care if I died the next day. I wanted to get high and drunk and forget everything I did. All that hard work, you know, everything. You know, I didn't love anything. I didn't love myself. And today I love myself. I love looking in the mirror and saying, you go, girl. Sorry. I get excited, you know, and I have now my 36 months of non-formal probation is up, and I get to go to the jail, I get to go to the courthouse and get my thing, my misdemeanor expunged, which I'm super excited, because me got them. So I get to get it expunged. And, you know, I practiced so many times walking into a place to interview and explaining misdemeanor and commercial burglary. They said, okay, what did you know? We can't hire you. But it was today, you know, I've been at my job for over a year and a half now. I'm a dispatcher, and I love my job. I know I use my communication. I'm not face-to-face with people, but I'm on the phone, and I work for Ready Roof Plumbing. So people call in a panic. You're like, oh, my gosh, the toilet's overflowing. I said, we got you. You know, I get to, got you. You know, we'll be there. And I give them a commitment, and they trust me, and they say, oh, my gosh, I love you. I'm like, I love you, too. And so, you know, I get those data bills today, and I get to shine for my son. You know, he's 5 now, and I could have lost him to the court system. I could have done something I would have, regret. But he is the smartest person I could think of. You know, I told him, I'm sharing at the Creative Center tonight. He's like, is that the one with the mic? I said, yeah. He's like, can I stand up there? And I just said, you know, you're going to be at home with my brother, and I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope, because I am so blessed. And, you know, it's this gift that I was so freely given that each and every one of you get. And to stay clean and sober, it's just, you know, we get to live life on life's terms. You know, I get to wake up, yeah, I have stuff going on. You know, I've been renting my house for my dad, and now my brother moved in, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And now my dad has to have knee surgery, now he's moving in, and now my little cute, secure bubble is getting poked. And I'm just like, okay, you know, God, what are we going to do about this? You know, I can't control my family. They've given me a place to stay, to get back on my feet, and I'm tickled because I get to help them, you know. And with health issues, you know, I get to take care of myself. I remember for like 2 months when I was working here after college, I would drive every day to Turlock just to see my ex. Every day. And I remember I didn't drink water for like 3 days, and I almost passed out on the freeway. And today I get to take care of myself. You know, if there's something wrong, if I have a toothache, financially, I get to take care and follow through. You know, I got on my own health insurance. So I get to pay for those things today, you know. And before it was, how do I play the system? How do I get away with that? You know, and today I get to be that standing up citizen. And, you know, my parents are proud of me. I made an amends. Step 9, oh my goodness. I told my dad the things I really did, the things I stole from him, and he cried. He's like, how could you? And I said, that was not me. You know, that was the person drugged, and, you know, I would have done anything for it. And I'm financially giving him amends, you know, and I have my sister. I gave my sister an amends, and we are so close now. I never thought we could be close again, you know, and I get that family connection. They trust me, and they celebrated my birthday. They took my son and I to the circus, and it was so much fun. And just to see his face, you know, and I get to be that role model, and he gets to know that it's okay. You know, we get frustrated, we get nervous, and it's just giving it to God and praying for the next indicated thing. You know, at work, I pause and I ask for the next indicated thing, and I know deep down that we all have our moments and we all get angry and we all get lonely, and it's kind of just reaching out and helping each other. You know, I'm so blessed to have all my friends here today and just the support. You know, I got so nervous thinking about this, but I'm just like, how could I not share what I've so freely been given? You know, I should have been, I could have OD'd or I could have been in prison right now, and I don't do orange. So I am so happy I'm here today. I am so happy I'm here today. I'm learning. I'm learning about hobbies, and I didn't have a hobby. I didn't, hobbies was that. So now I'm learning on how to have fun, clean and sober at 31. And I'm learning how to shop. I've never liked shopping, so I'm learning how to be a girl again and how to go shopping and do my hair. And I'm learning. And, you know, when I told my son, he said, okay, dear God, please help Bridget, please help mom not to be scared with all those people staring at her. Amen. And, you know, those things, you know, when I get home, how was it, mom? How was your share? And I'm like, I got to share it, baby. And he, you know, he asked, were you ever in jail, mom? Would you ever do this? Did you ever do this? And I said, I can't wait till you're older and I can share that with you. You know, it's kind of that he's going to get to that point that he knows. He even tells me, because I always say, Blake, let's start our day over. And he said, okay, mom. And he catches me when I start getting frustrated with him, or I lock my keys in my car like I did last Friday. He said, mom, start over. You're struggling. And then I stopped and I found a spare key. And so we help each other out. But he's not, I'm trying to get out of that hobby. I'm trying to do things and learn who I am today. And I'm learning how to barbecue. And that's fun. And I'm excited to sponsor people. I'm excited to share what my sponsors, so, I drove her nuts. And, you know, it was a long process, but she stuck by me and encouraged me and lifted me up and guided me through this process. And I am excited to share what she has shared with me. So, am I good? Thank you so much for letting me share tonight.